सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ॐ ॐ आप्यायन्तु ममाङ्गानि वाक्प्राणचक्षुषुः श्रोत्रमथो बलमैन्द्रियाणि च सर्वाणि सर्वं ब्रह्मोपनिषदम् माहं ब्रह्म निराकुर्याम् मामा ब्रह्म निराकरोद् अनिराकरणमस्तु अनिराकरणं मे अस्तु। तदात्मनि निरतेय उपनिषत्सु धर्मास्ते मयि सन्तु ते मयि सन्तु। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। We have seen the story which was told for the students who were not as evolved as the others who had left, and there were still students left. So Shruti, the guru, makes it more simple and tells it in the form of a simple story, though that story has a very, very deep significance. And after the story is told, few other students leave. They understand, and there are students who leave, but there are still some more students left. So Shruti is now giving her comments on the whole, you know, topic, on the whole theme of Brahma Vidya. And she gave two examples, which we saw last time. One was at the Adibhautik level, the phenomenal forces level, and one was at the Adhyatmik level, which is from within us. The Adibhautik examples were of lightning and of like the blinking of an eye. The significance of lightning and blinking of an eye is that they both come in a flash and go away. They don't stay. Lightning doesn't stay for a while. Even the blinking, if we just keep the eyes closed, then its eyes are closed. But blinking happens only in a fraction of a second. So that is the idea that it comes and goes. The flashes of Brahman come and go. That's why that is one comparison. I told you that even in our waking state, in our day-to-day life, there are certain times when I suppose the grace is there. And even in very dire circumstances, we are able to maintain our calm. That is one thing. And second thing is, of course, in samadhi, in the initial stages of samadhi, these flashes come and go. It means the yogi is supposed to be experiencing that Brahman, but it goes away, and then he practices more and more, so that as he becomes firm in his practice, the abidance also becomes firm. So that is the other comparison. Another point is lightning is very bright. So also to tell us that Brahman is of the nature of light, of the nature of awareness, of the nature of consciousness. It is not an inert existence. It is not a shunya. It is not a void. There is a presence which is very, very bright. The other significance of these two examples is that lightning doesn't happen every day. Sometimes it happens, maybe during the rainy season or whatever, some season. But blinking is much happens every single day. Nobody can have their eyes completely open all the time or completely closed all the time. And so blinking happens very, very often. So as per the practice of the yogi, flashes could happen very often. We see that in the life of yogis who are practitioners of samadhi. The next verse, Shruti brought it down to the level of the mind. And she said that because the significance is, the idea is that the mind is very, very used to objectifying things, and the mind is actually used to understanding objects. So she says, make Brahman into an object. and then keep thinking about that object, because we are very used to thinking about outside objects. She says, consider Brahman also to be an object. It is not an object, please understand. But for the ease of the student is told, you think about it as Brahman, as an object, and as you think, so shall you become. So that is the idea. So you bring it to the level of the mind, bring it to the level of the thought. And then what is to be done, which I had already explained in the chapter one, that attention should be shifted from the object of thought to the source of thought. That is the whole idea. We are very much used to paying too much attention to the object, and the mind just gets carried away with the object. It runs with the object. Object could be anger, could be jealousy, could be love, could be compassion, anything. That is an object. I don't mean object means a physical object. There can be a physical object, of course, but even these are objects of the mind. The emotions are also objects of the mind. So we get angry and then we maybe blurt out or do something which we regret. So rather than that, rather than focusing on the object, focus on the source of thought. And that is what will take you there, because the source of thought is the substratum, is the final substratum, is the pure consciousness. The substratum with agitation equals mind. That is the, if you want to put it in a mathematical formula, pure consciousness plus agitation equals mind. Therefore, mind minus agitation becomes pure consciousness. Okay, so calming the mind is Patanjali's Yoga Sutras also. Of course, this is not concerned with Yoga Sutras, but I'm telling you the definition of yoga he's given as Chitta Vritti Nirodha, his definition of yoga. So it's defined as Chitta Vritti, Chitta mind, Vritti thoughts, Nirodha stoppage, cessation. So what is yoga as per him is the cessation of thought. Because when the thoughts cease, the substratum will become obvious. Like when the clouds are removed, the sun is going to be seen. It's the same idea. So that is what Shruti has told. Now she gives a Nama Upasana, another simple this thing. And she gives a name to Brahman. Brahman cannot be named, please. Okay. But this is because now the... in that group of students, the very least evolved are remaining. And yet the teaching is not as simple as in the Bhagavad Gita. So that tells you that even these so-called less evolved students are quite highly evolved. Okay. So we are on verse 6 in chapter 4. Tadvadanam nama tadvadanam mityupasitavyam saya etadevam vedabihainanga sarvani bhutani savanchati. Brahman is well known as Tadvanam. See, this Tadvanam name is only this Upanishad I have seen it in. I have not seen it in any other Upanishad, this name. Okay, so Shruti is telling the students that Brahman, know it as Tadvanam, and then do Namo Upasana, means Tadvanam, means I am that, Tadvanam, I am Tadvanam. This is how this is being told. The one who is to be worshipped as the Atman of all living beings. So it is to be meditated upon as Tadvana. All love him who know it thus. So now she's giving more help. She, in the previous stanza, she said, objectify it. Now she's also giving it a name. Okay. When we objectify something, we have given it a form, because formless can never be objectified. So since we are told to objectify it, then form automatically name will follow. Now she's giving the name Tadvana, that which is most worshipful. And yet the instruction is only to meditate on that. See, the teaching even here is very subtle, because meditation itself is very, very difficult, very, very subtle. So even though these are less evolved students and they could not grasp it in the first three chapters, whatever was being told, they're still asked to meditate. So telling us that the mind is still quite pure for them, but not as pure. So now asking them to meditate, this is what she's doing. She says, meditate on that as an object named Tadvana, and it means the one who is most worshipful. That is a very simple explanation of this verse. And this falls under Upasana. The Vedas, I told you, there are four Vedas, but they can be divided into three parts: Karma, Upasana, and Jnana. So Karma is Karma Kanda, where only the Karma Kanda is, and Karma falls under two categories: Sakama and Nishkama. So all the Karma Kanda is Sakama Karma. Sakama means with desire. So I have a desire to have a son, so then I will do Putra Kameshti Yajna. I have a desire to have wealth, I'll do something. I have a desire to go to the heavens, I will do another Yajna. So all the Yajnas which are done with a desire in mind are called as Sakama Karma. When we are on the path of Vedanta or Upanishads, like when we are studying this Advaita philosophy, what we say is, you do karma, but make it nishkama, without desire. Now, what does without desire mean? You do the karma with the intention that I want to only purify my mind. So we don't do yajnas in this day and age, okay? So, and nobody's expecting us to do yajnas, but whatever that work that I have been assigned to, my work at home, my work at office, whatever the work is there, that's what Bhagavan Krishna is telling Arjuna. Your job is now to kill, so you better kill the enemy. So whatever job is assigned to us, he says, don't, the result of karma will come. Don't worry about it. See, nobody does action without a result in mind. That is also there. But we must think that I want to purify my mind and therefore I want to do this duty. I must not think that, you know, I want to do this so that people will appreciate, I will get this, I will get that. If people have to appreciate, they'll appreciate it. You do it to the best of your knowledge, but in your mind, you have the thought that I want to purify my mind. Okay? So, karma. Upasana becomes when you understand that karma very well, what you're actually doing. So this becomes upasana. This meditation is an upasana. It is not an actual physical karma because there is meditation involved and meditation on tadvana, which is who is the most worshipful. Most worshipful is only the Brahman, pure consciousness. Okay. And then finally, the jnana portion, which was already explained in Kenopanishad in the first three chapters. Because they couldn't get it at that highest level, she has brought them down to this second level, upasana. She's not bringing them down to karma still. She doesn't bring them down to karma at all. Because that is then meant for people like Arjun, who is a student who is very much less evolved, like us. So that is for them. But for these students who are not as evolved as the other ones, upasana is given. And upasana is given. Tadvana. Okay? This is what? So she came down a notch. Just one notch Shruti came down. Now, there are still some, it is said that some students after this, some students again left. They did this, they realized, they left. But still some students were left. Now, these students had another question. So this is the second question in this text. Let us look at the question. So it's verse number 7. Mantra number 7. Upanishadam bho bruhityukta te Upanishad brahmi vavatai Upanishadam bruhmeti. Disciple. So the question and the answer both are in this. Disciple says, sir, teach me the saving knowledge. Okay. Upanishadam bho bruhita yukta. Teach me. So tell me the saving knowledge. Preceptor. So the answer is given by the guru. The saving knowledge has been imparted to you. Because now so far, you know, now already one notch down we came. Verily, we have imparted the saving knowledge of Brahman to you. So again, the preceptor, the guru is repeating that, yes, indeed, we have given you the knowledge. So the question arises for us, what is the meaning of this question? You tell me saving knowledge. Are you, but what was I telling you in the last three chapters? Were you not listening? So because saving knowledge only we were telling you. No, we were not telling you something else. Now you're asking, so the guru is saying, but we've already told you that. So the Bhagwan Shankaracharya, he comments on this verse saying that it cannot mean that the student, that means, that's why we say that the language of the Upanishads is very mystic. So he says we cannot take the direct, you know, we have the direct meaning and the indirect meaning of statements. We cannot take the direct meaning here. Direct meaning is what? Tell me what you told me in the last three chapters. That is the direct meaning. Tell me the saving knowledge, right? Which has already been told. So it is like, you know, you make a powder out of something and now you're going to powder the powder again. What is the point? No point. So it cannot mean that, you know, tell me what you have already told me. Okay, fine. If it doesn't mean that, then is the student thinking that maybe something was held back and he's asking that? That, you know, maybe you told us, but there is something more. And please tell me that something more. When we look at the answer of the preceptor, we impart it to you. And a spiritual guru, that is the significance of a spiritual, he will never hide anything. He will give, you know, some, this has happened to me, in just, you know, you ask for a recipe to somebody and they'll just withhold some small detail. Very small, but very significant it is. And then it never, your dish never turns out like that. And then, you know, there's that just a tiny bit, you know, but the spiritual guru is not like that. He's compassionate. He wants his student to get this bliss, get this knowledge. He wants him to be a better guru than himself. He wants him to be, he go even higher. So he will never hold back anything. Okay, so these two things do not, that is not what is implied in this. Question arises, then what is the student asking? Like, what is he asking? So what he's actually trying to ask is, this Brahma Vidya, is it independent in giving results or is it dependent on something? So let me explain this a little bit more. Let us take in our day-to-day transactional world, okay? See, in this world, there are two things. Apraptasya prapti, technical language, Sanskrit. Apraptasya prapti and praptasya prapti. Apraptasya prapti means to gain, I want something which I don't have right now. So I don't have a house. I don't have a job. I don't have a degree. I don't have a spouse. I don't have a child. Something that I don't have, but I want it. Okay, fine. So when there is something which I don't have and I want it, there is karma, time and space involved in there. Means if I want a job, I have to go to college, go to university, spend time studying, get a degree. Just because I got the degree doesn't mean that immediately somebody will come knocking and give me a job. Okay. All right. You can say, oh, but I was a co-op student and I got my job immediately. Even if you get the job immediately, the minimum you have to wait is for 2 weeks to get your paycheck, right? So there is time involved. There is space involved. So for apraptasya prapti, it is a dependent knowledge. See, just because I get a degree doesn't mean I'll get a job. There are so many people holding degrees don't have a job, okay? Just because I get a job, I may get fired. I may not get paid, right? So it becomes dependent. What I don't have and what I want, for that, whatever that I do is dependent. So even knowledge becomes dependent on getting a job. Job becomes dependent on how good I work. Then I will get a raise, a salary, a bonus, a this, a that, everything. So it's a dependent knowledge. Whereas praptasya prapti, what happens in praptasya prapti is I have it already. Okay. Most common example that in Atmabodha example is there. The example given by Bhagwan Shankaracharya is this lady is wearing, I'm wearing a chain in my neck, but I don't know. I forgot, right? And now I'm, oh my God, where is my chain? Where is my necklace? Now somebody comes and says, Jay, you're wearing it. It's right in your neck, right? So I already had it, but I didn't know I had it. So how long does it take to gain that thing? Immediate knowledge is immediate. Gain is immediate upon knowledge. There is no waiting. Now I have to wait, or I drive my car, park it, and get out and put the keys in my jacket pocket. Go somewhere, come back, and I'm looking for my keys at my usual spot, which is my purse. Now I can't find the keys. So I'm looking for them, looking for them. Somebody comes and says, hey, I saw you put them in your jacket pocket, right? So how long does it now take me to get those keys? Immediate. The minute I come to know they're in my jacket pocket, finish. The gain is there. So with this Brahma Vidya, what is being asked, is it a knowledge like that, that I will get Brahma Vidya, then I will do something, then I will get moksha, or it does it give result immediately? That is what the import of this question is. That what is that saving knowledge? Is it independent, standing on its own two legs, or is it again dependent? Means I get this Brahma Vidya, I will do this Tadvanam Upasana, then I will come to realize Tadvanam, then is moksha immediate, or after that then I've got to do something? All right, this is the import of this question. Because if you look at the question, it is like, what, you want me to repeat all the three chapters again? No, it can't be like that. All right. So then the guru replies, preceptor replies. The answer, of course, to that is it is immediate. The minute you come to realize your own true nature, moksha is immediate. Moksha is, what is the definition of moksha? I've told you, anybody, of course, I can't interact, but moksha means Paramananda Sukha Prapti. Paramananda Prapti means cessation of all sorrows. Paramananda Prapti is gain of complete happiness, bliss, and cessation of all sorrows. So these two aspects are there in moksha, that all the sorrows have to cease, every single one of them, and the gain has to be of that permanent bliss. Paramananda Prapti and Shoka Nivruti, Atyanta Shoka Nivruti. Nivruti, withdrawal or cessation of Atyanta Dukha. Atyanta means all, without an exception, all sorrows have to be removed and the gain has to be there. These two are definitions of moksha. So the minute I come to realize my own self, I get moksha. There is nothing in between moksha and realization. Between knowledge and result, there is no gap, like in the transactional world. Knowledge, I will get a degree, then I have to go look for a job, get a job, and then I have to work for a couple of weeks, then I'll get paid. Okay, so that gap is not there. This is the answer. Now, the guru says, tasai tapo damaha karmeti pratishtha vedaha sarvangani satyamayatanam. So the guru is now giving a little bit hints as to what will make this knowledge easy. This is what is being told here. Austerity. Tasse means that knowledge. Tasse, okay? Austerity, restraint, and dedicated work, these are the foundations of it. It means that Brahma Vidya. That Brahma Vidya, which is capable of giving immediate results upon getting it. The foundations are austerity, restraint, and dedicated work. The saving knowledge of the Upanishads. The Vedas are its limbs and truth is its abode. Okay. So basically, not that it requires the Vedas. Vedas limbs means it should not be thought that Brahman needs support of the Vedas. The reason this Vedas is being said here is through the Vedas you can reach Brahman. It's Shabda Praman, right? So through the Vedas. So let us see tapas. Tapas is penance. Meaning of tapas is penance. Tapas is the control of the sense organs practiced with a view to bringing about a perfect hold on the mind and the lower impulses. So very common example of tapas is fast or diet. You know, that is very common. So where I decide that I'm going to fast on this particular day, then there are certain things that I will not eat. Or so, you know, that is penance. Or a student whose exams are coming up, he says, oh, for 1 month, I'm not going to go for any party or a movie. The Olympics, I think they just finished or they're going on, right? The Winter Olympics. So the athlete who is practicing for the gold medal, now he has cut out all his other engagements. That is penance. That is tapas. Okay. So what happens in tapas is the energy is conserved. Energy is because you see, it is not being wasted in unnecessary things, right? So if you take the example of the student who is going to write an exam in a month, now he is not dissipating his energy in going for parties or movies. So that energy is now conserved. And then what he has to do is he has to channel it to the right direction. He may conserve and then do something. No. So for him, he will conserve that energy and then use it for studying. So this dhamma, the next one, is that is what channeling it. Because you can do penance and you'll conserve energy. But if you let the sense organs run amok, dhamma is the control of the sense organs. Okay, so now you've fasted and you're on a diet, that's what happens to most of us. We go on a special diet and then after that we say, oh, I dieted now I can eat whatever, right? So then all that thing is wasted. It's wasted. So tapas, you conserve energy, and then dhamma, you channel it in the right, means don't channel it through the senses. Dhamma is meant that because this, why through the senses? Because senses are extroverted. So if you let the senses run in the sense objects, all that energy that you've conserved is going to go into those channels, extroverted channels. And in Vedanta, because we have to go inwards, upasana, meditation, all is inwards, that energy must not be allowed to flow outwards. And that is accomplished by dhamma. Okay. Therefore, he says, tapas, conserve energy, whatever, by whatever means. Any, you know, attending class also is penance. Getting up at a certain time, all that falls under any kind of discipline that we follow, it falls under penance. Walking alone in the morning, like I've decided to walk, then I walk by yourself, walk at the same route. Then you think, all that falls under tapas. Any kind of, see, tapas also, it's like when you're trying, when you go against your natural tendencies, that is tapas. Like for a person who is used to getting up at 10 every day, then for him to get up at 7 is tapas. That becomes tapas. Because now he's trying to go against his natural tendencies. Okay. And that will conserve energy. That must not be allowed to be wasted through the senses. That must be utilized in controlling the mind. All right. And karmeti. Here the word karma is used, but it should be taken as karma yoga, not ordinary karma. I told you karma is nishkama and sakama. So here karma means nishkama karma, means all the actions, all the activities that I do in my life should be with an intention to only purify my mind and nothing else. Then it becomes nishkama. We must not worry about the results, because it is the law of karma that when a karma is done, the results will come. So why I should worry about it? I should do my duty. We have seen the rules of laws of karma yoga in chapter 3. I should do my duty to the best of my ability and leave the rest. That what happens then is, see, our energies are wasted in thinking, will I get it? Will I get it? When will I get the result? When will I? All that energy is wasted. When I used to work, you know, we'd come back from holidays, and of course, there would be like hundreds of emails waiting there, and people would just look and then, oh my God, I'm so stressed now. There's so much worrying, you know, so much. And then, okay, I need a cup of coffee. So they've gone. Now, instead of that, if you just focus at one email at a time and try dealing with that, or one file at a time and try dealing with it, you're worrying. So that energy is getting wasted. That should not be done. So with this karma, what happens is, when our eyes are only on the result, we will be worried. You know, like, am I going to get the result? Is this going to happen? Is that going to happen? Not going to happen, etc., etc. So what happens then is the energy is, therefore, this nishkama karma becomes, it becomes a win-win situation. If I do without ego and egocentric desires, then what happens is it becomes nishkama. I'm doing it only for the purification of my own mind, and it takes away the pressure. All right. So that way also the energy is conserved. And then it can be used towards the meditation. So Pratishtha Vedaha. So the Upanishads is the saving knowledge in the Vedas, and the Vedangas. There are six Veda and Anga. Vedanga means Veda, Anga. Anga means part or a limb. like my hand is an anga of my body, you know. So it's this. There are six Vedangas. This is just information of the Vedas. One is called Shiksha. So Shiksha is a pronunciation. Like how, see, the Vedic mantras are chanted, there are certain rules. So if whoever has done Vedic chanting, you know, there are those, there's one line, there are two lines, and then there is, so it has to be chanted like that. So so that falls under this Shiksha. The pronunciation has to be correct, like the intonations. Okay, that is one Anga. Kalpa. Kalpa is the Karmakanda portion of the Vedas. Okay. Vyakrana. Vyakrana means grammar. There is grammar. I've told you already this before, that Panini's Ashtadhyayi grammar, the grammar rules, he has taken from the Vedas. Vedas were not written looking at his Ashtadhyayi. When we write, if a Sanskrit author is writing something, he will look at the Ashtadhyayi and he will make sure that it falls under that. But Vedas are not like, Vedas were before and Ashtadhyayi came afterwards. So that Vyakrana, that grammar, was taken from the Vedas. Then Nirukta. Nirukta means etymology of every word. You know, when I give you the break of a word, I usually do it right. Like if it is Bhakti, Bhajdhatu, you know, and what is the meaning of Bhajdhatu? That is called etymology. So that is how the meaning is derived. In Sanskrit, the words, every word has a verbal root. And that root can have more than one meaning. And as per the root, the meaning of that word will change. So which meaning of the root you take will determine the meaning of that word. Okay. A very simple example to give you, and it should come in Narad Bhakti Sutra also. This Bhakti word comes from the root Bhaj. And Bhaj has three meanings. Bhaj meaning to love, to serve, and to worship. So depending on what meaning you're taking, bhakti could mean love, bhakti could mean serving, and bhakti could also mean worshipping, because then that root, verbal root meaning you're taking. And that is what is meant by etymology. Okay, where it is come from. Chandas is meter. So, of course, in this book, even if there was a meter, I shouldn't say that there is no meter. I don't know the meter. If there is a meter, I didn't know. So I read this whole book in prose. But quite a few of the mantras in the Vedas are in prose. You have to read them in prose. Some of them have the meter. That's why I told you Bhagavad Gita has a meter, because why? It is man-made. So when a person is writing it, he will make sure. And therefore, there are even extra words in Bhagavad Gita, like extra in the sense, to complete the meter, the author might add cha, vai, he. These are called nipat, and they may be added. But in the Vedas, so some of the mantras, yes, we can, there is some meter that can be applied, but not all of them. Okay. And then Jyotisam is astrology. So those are the six limbs of the Vedas. They're called as Vedangas. And when it is said that the Vedas are its limbs, means through the limbs you can reach that. It doesn't mean that Brahman is there because of the Vedas, or Brahman is standing because of the Vedas. Because Brahman, please understand, Brahman is support. It is its own support. It doesn't need any support of the Vedas. It doesn't need. See, understand it this way. Brahman is Satchitananda, Ananda, right? It is the existence principle. Now, do I need the Vedas to tell me that I'm existing? Is my existence dependent on the Vedas? It is not. I know I'm existing. Why do I need the Vedas? Question then arises. The reason that I need the Vedas is to remove my misconception. Because I know that I'm existing, but I think I'm the body, mind, and intellect. And that is erroneous thinking. And to remove that erroneous thinking, I need the Vedas. Vedas meaning Upanishads. I need the spiritual masters to tell me, because I didn't know till I came in contact with the mission also. I didn't know that I was not. I thought, yeah, I'm this body and yeah, this is me, right? So to know that I'm existing, I don't need any other proof. That is why Brahman is independent. It doesn't need proof of the Vedas. We do not need Vedas. There are people who have not even read the Vedas and have realized the self, because there's got no connection between that way. But those who are, you know, read like us, if we don't have faith, then we want some proof, then of course it is the Vedas. Just to tell us tell us where my thinking is wrong. To tell me how I'm thinking incorrectly, I need the Vedas. That's all. Okay? And truth, Satya Ayatanam. It is the abode of the final truth. Brahman is the final truth. Final meaning, causeless cause. There is none. You cannot go any further than that. All right? So this was 8. Okay, then we are on the last mantra. Yova etamevam veda pahatya papmanamanante swarge loke jaye pratitishtatiti. Om shanti shanti shantihi. Verily, he who knows it thus destroys sin and is established in Brahman, the boundless, the highest, and the blissful. Yes, he's established in it. So the reason for the last word being repeated is to indicate that this is the end of the text. That's one. Okay, pratishtita iti. Iti means full stop. So that is what the highest and blissful. Yes, he is established in it. Who knows it thus? Thus means whatever has been explained from chapter 1 to this last verse. He who gets established in that by whatever means. Okay. So first, the first batch of students who knew it, Brahman as the subject, that's fine. Or doing as upasana, that is fine. So whichever way, lightning, thoughts, whatever guidance Shruti has given, whoever gets established, destroys sin. The greatest sin is to think that I am this inert matter. What is the inert matter? Body. Body is inert, and I think that I am this inert matter. That is the greatest sin. Because we think sin means, I don't sin, I don't lie, I don't steal. That's not the sin that we are talking about here. Destroys sin means destroys identification with inert matter. Because right now I'm very much identified with the inert matter, which is my body. And I think I'm the body. And that's why I'm miserable, because anything that happens to the body, I take it as it's happening to me. And that's the reason that I'm very, very miserable. So when it destroys sin, that identification is broken. And that is the reason that it is cessation of all sorrows. All the sorrows, no, they're coming from this inert matter. The body gets diseased, the body gets sick, the body gets old, the body gets this, that, pain. All this is happening in inert matter. And because of that, there is sorrow. The mind gets hurt when somebody doesn't say hello, when somebody doesn't phone me, then the mind gets hurt. So that is again sorrow. When somebody says you're an idiot, then the intellect gets hurt. Then that is again sorrow. So all these sorrows are at the level of the body, mind, and intellect. Once that identification is broken, even, you know, every day in deep sleep also we break the identification. Therefore, we are very happy in deep sleep. Because then I don't know my body is hurting. I don't know that somebody insulted me. I don't know that somebody called me an idiot. I forget all that. So that the minute you break that, now this identification here in samadhi is broken permanently. So therefore it is destroying all the sins. Okay. That is the sin. That is the primordial sin, is to think that I am the body. That is the basic sin. So that is then destroyed, broken. And he gets swarge loke. Now, here swarga must not be taken as heaven. The reason is there is a word before that. Anante swarge loke. So the swarga, as we know it, heavens, and I've told you many, many times that it is a point of return. It is not a permanent abode. It is an abode which you earn because of your merits in this life. And when those merits are over, you come back. So here swarga, anante swarge, is referring to Brahman only. Because swarga is not ananta. That swarga that we know of, heaven, is not ananta, endless. Whereas Brahman alone is endless. Brahman alone is ananta. And therefore, when it is said anante swarge, this swarga should not be taken as heaven. Brahma Vidya will not give you heaven. Heaven is not our aim at all. Please, heaven is, if you desire heaven, you will get heaven, but then you will come back. So what is the point? So Anante Swarge is referring to that highest pure consciousness, substratum, the truth, from where there is no return. Yad gatva na nivartante. Bhagavan said in chapter 15 of Bhagavad Gita, having gone there, one does not return. It is a point of no return. That is what our aim is. Jaye. In the highest blissful, pratitishtati. Pratitishtati, abide. Pratishtha. Pratishthana, pratishtha is to be firm in there. So firmly abides in that bliss, which is anante swarge, which means ananta means endless bliss. So endless bliss is only Brahman. Endless bliss is not swarga. Swarga, yes, it is a place of happiness where there are no sorrows. Agreed? That is agreed. But it ends. That is the difference between swarga and Brahman. Both are place of happiness only. One ends, one doesn't end. And that's why this knowledge will get you to abide in that permanent bliss. Yes, it will get you that abidance. And this is where Om Shanti, 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 may there be peace. And this is where this Upanishad ends. Okay? The truth has to be known in the path of knowledge. Truth has to be known as it is, not what I think it is. There are two words. There is one which is known as Vastu Tantra and one which is known as Purusha Tantra. Okay, Purusha Tantra means the tantra. You know, Swatantra. Tantra is whatever you think. So when I look at a Shivling and I say it is Shivji, Lord Shiva, that is Purusha Tantra. Because I have looked at that Shivling, which is actually only a black stone. Actually it is. But I consider it. So it is a deliberate superimposition. All right. With Brahman, you can, with knowledge, this is all knowledge based. This is not bhakti or upasana or anything. Only in the last one, Shruti gives that upasana because the student is not evolved, but it is not. So in knowledge, it has to be Vastu Tantra. Vastu Tantra means Tantra is controlled. So what the Vastu is dictating, we must know. So knowledge of the Shivling, if it is Jnana Margi, he will say it is a black stone. Because it is. It is a black stone. Okay. But an Upasaka, a Bhakta, he says it is my Lord Shiva. That is the difference. So in this, in case of Brahman, you cannot do deliberate superimposition. It is not allowed. You have to know Brahman as is. You have to know it as Vastu Tantra. As Brahman is, that blissful self, you have to come to realize it like that. You cannot say that this is Brahman. To help you to reach that stage, you can meditate on Tadvana and, you know, all that object. But in actuality, it is not an object. That is to be understood. Okay, so this is what he says here, concludes that with the tapas and dhamma and karma yoga will help you, because karma will help in purification of the mind. When the mind is more purified, it will not be that wandering. A pure mind will be very steady. It will be very calm. And that is what will conserve energy. And then you will get permanent abidance in this anante swarge, endless bliss. Okay. As is our custom, I'm going to read the first verse again to indicate to us that the studies are not complete, but we will continue to study this. And after that, we have some time. So if anybody has any questions or wants to say anything, and then we'll talk about, because I think we have next Monday and then I'm coming there. So anyway, the verse one. Kene shitam patati preshitam manaha, kena pranaha, prathama preti yuktaha, kene shitam vachamimam vadanti, Chakshuhu Kshrotram Kau Deo Unakti. By whom willed and directed does the mind light upon its objects? Commanded by whom does the main vital air prana proceed to function? By whose will do men utter speech? What intelligence directs the eyes and the ears towards their respective objects? Okay, so by Gurudev's grace and blessings, we have managed to complete an Upanishad. It has really given me great pleasure to study this. Like I said, I'm going to be in April starting this in Vancouver again on Sunday, in my Sunday class. So if there are any questions, please ask. There is time. No questions? Okay. Ashok, are you there?
Yes, Jayaji.
Are we starting Kaivalya Upanishad next?
Yeah, we have enough books to start Kaivalya Upanishad.
You have the books. Good, good. So what I would request is, because next Monday is the last Monday and then the following Monday I'm going to be in Calgary. So can we not have a class next Monday? And then we will start class the Monday after right after I come back from Calgary. Because what I'm saying is, we'll have one class and then there'll be a break. And then there'll be, so instead of that, if it's okay with all of you, what I would like to do is start it after I come back from Calgary. So I'm coming back on the 23rd, 24th, 26th March would be the next. Today we are on the 5th, 12th, and then 19th, I'm myself in Calgary. So 26th, we can start the new text. That is what I would, so that then again, immediately there is no break. Is that, if that's okay, then let me know.
That's okay.
Because, yeah, because we'll do like one class and then there'll be a break. So let's not do that. Let us start Kaivalya Upanishad on the 26th of March. And while we are at it, Monday, May 21st is Victoria Day. It's a long weekend. And generally we cancel class, but 21st we have to, because Swami Chidatmananji is going to be in Vancouver. So May 21st, I'm telling you right now, there will not be a class. Okay, so mark it down. May 21st is the Monday. It's a long weekend. So I think generally long weekends, we don't have class, but Swami Chidatmananda will be here. And so there will be no class. But other than that.
I know. And we will just be returning from our retreat as well.
Oh, perfect. So 21st, definitely no class. And then, of course, the Easter Monday and all, you guys decide. I'm not going anywhere. So that's up to you. Is that okay? All right. Yeah. Is
there anything? Jayaji, earlier tonight you said when you're meditating, you can have brief glimpses. And it's like you're flipping, like lightning.
Lightning, yeah.
But later you said when you realize it, it's immediate.
No. Immediate. No. Later on, what I said is when you realize the destruction of sin, the gain, the moksha is immediate. But to realize that flash is not enough. Flash is not enough. What the flash is doing is giving you glimpses of it. Like if you look at the life of Raman Maharshi, at 16, he had that glimpse. Okay? And then he left and he went. Because once you get that glimpse, nothing outside will please you. Just that, they say, even a fraction of a second, if you can experience that Brahman, really, really experience it, everything else will lose its charm for you. But then that is not enough. Then what happens is that person who really gets that glimpse never will turn back to the world. He will always go, because he will go after it. Because it is said, for me, only theory. I have not experienced. But what I read is that even if you get this inkling, you will not come back into the world. You will go. That's what Raman Maharshi did, the Pon Maharaj, all of them. Right? Yeah. Then when they abide, when they actually abide, then they come back. Swami Vivekananda came back, Gurudev came back, but not in that just that one flash they got and they came. Not like that. You have to practice and stay in that light for longer and longer and longer time.
So it's gradual.
It is gradual.
Okay.
It's a lot of practices required, and also the staying, the abidance, it is controlled by two factors. One is the practice that you've put in, and second is what you've done in your past life. So the practice, you know, how much practice of meditation you have done, but what you're bringing from your past life, you don't know. So both these factors determine how long you will stay and how quickly you will abide in there.
Jay, a question.
Yeah.
This is Ajit. I think in the first lesson when you talked about that, by whose ishitam and prashitam does things happen,
mm-hmm.
For all of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, in this text, it doesn't talk about vasanas and all that, but that ishitam and preshitam, is mm-hmm. that more the vasanas, basically, from that standpoint?
No. Because who is directing the vasanas also? Where are the vasanas also? Who, vasanas are supported by whom?
Correct. Okay.
Here, they're talking about the fine. That is the beauty of the Upanishad, that it doesn't talk about all these, you know. Then the spiritual masters have broken it down, and then vasana, and then desire, and how you control the desire, etc. But okay. Upanishads, they only talk about the highest.
So it's like in that, some of the BMI chart, then above the BMI chart, there is,
yes,
the vasanas.
Om.
And above that is Om. So that's what they're talking about.
Correct. Absolutely correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else? Yeah. All right. So continue studying in Upanishad. It's nice. And we will start Kavala Upanishad. There's another beautiful text. And when I introduced the Upanishads, I told you there were two major and minor. Kavala is considered as a minor Upanishad, because it talks only about meditation. So that's what it is. Okay. Kevala. All right. So nice. It'll be nice studying that Upanishad too for me. Okay. Shall we conclude? And I shall see you now in Calgary when I come on 18th. I will be there on the 18th. And I hope to see all of you over there.
And more.
Yeah. Minimum, at least all of you should show up. So I'll be there on the 18th, okay? And okay. You have my itinerary, right, Abhimanyu? Lata has it?
Yeah.
Lata has it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, perfect. All right.